to the Booze and Boobs podcast. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Katrina. Thanks for joining us today as we talk about some of our favorite horror movies.
We created this podcast as a way to give women more of a voice in horror. Men dominate most industries, especially film and television.
And that also goes for podcasts. We'll focus on female characters, motivations, or just expectations placed on women in horror, even if the situation is happening to a man.
We're excited you're here, and we hope you love it.
Now let's get to today's movie.
So, I always start recording because maybe we'll have some good content to start with, Marissa. Like,
welcome to Boobs and Boobs Radio, where it's mental illness 99% of the time.
99. Which one of you is okay?
I feel like Katrina is slightly less severe than you and me. She has a more reasonable approach to things.
Fake it till you make it.
So, Marissa, I understand that you listen to the podcast, but you have never been a part of it. So,
you guys would want to be like, do your little bit up top and then
a bit.
Yeah. Well, you know, you guys like talk about what your, you know, your life or whatever. And then you could be like, oh, and Marissa's here. And I'll be like, hello. Waka, 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 waka. I'm just a silly little guy.
I was just going to see what you thought on how you want to, since it's two movies. I know we did something similar like with Halloween. Is this going to be like a 50-50 focus, or are we going to do like 75% Hannibal, 25% Silence of the Lambs? How do you feel about that?
Well, in my rewatch, I have just really tripled down on the fact that Silence of the Lambs is a really perfect movie. Like, I took notes on it, but there are no notes. And Hannibal, I feel a little bit bad rewatching it because my first experience watching it was so incredible that there was no way that any sequential watch was going to be as good. So, like, that kind of made me want to talk about Silence of the Lambs a little bit more. But I made the topics the same. So, Marissa, since you didn't want to be included in our spreadsheet because you're too good for us.
I asked to be, after I said no, then I asked and you refused to give it to me, so.
Well, because that wasn't what you really wanted. You told me the truth, and I appreciate your honesty. And then you...
You don't appreciate it, though, because you're mad about it.
I'm not that mad. It's okay.
It's just I know me and I won't pay attention to it anyways because I just need to be like...
No, I mean, that's fine. It's just like our guidelines. I was a little bit disappointed, Katrina, that there were no fun scene names.
Listen, I finished watching these at 6:01.
And how much time did you know that we were going to watch and record these today?
Since I woke up, but I was busy at work.
Yeah, you knew before that. It's okay.
For once in my life, I actually had to work.
Oh my God, I've been having to work. Like, I'm sitting back here in my office and Cinnamon came in and I was just like, yep, we're back in this room.
I know. I had to work all day today and I was like, absolutely not. This is ridiculous.
That's bullshit.
I was like, where's my 4 hours of doing nothing?
Truly.
So, anyways, to get to it, our talking points that I wrote, Katrina, obviously, if you have any other specifics that you'd like to include, throw them in. For the themes of both movies are being a woman in a man's world and then watching through the lens of a dark romance girly. Anybody else have any main draw that they would like to include with that?
I think that pretty much covers it for me.
Yeah, same.
Okay. Do you want to start? Do you want me to start?
I'm thinking of what I was going to say. Unless you have something clever you want to start off with.
My clever thought is no banging with your water bottle.
It was my popcorn bowl. Understood, though.
Okay. No, I don't have anything specifically clever. If you want to start them, go with that. Okay, well, I'm gonna come up with something clever if you don't
Okay,
start
just
something.
come up with something clever like dark romancy, and then maybe mention cannibalism, and then you'll be good to go.
Oh, that was not what I was thinking.
Eat your heart out. There you go.
Eat your brains out.
Cannibalism and romance. Okay, go for it.
Oh, you want me to go? Okay.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. Hello, boobs and booze listeners. No laugh?
That was good. I wasn't gonna interrupt you. It
Since
sounded good
when?
though. I mean, that's
Okay,
good.
anyway, welcome to the Booze and Booze podcast, where we're talking about your favorite horror movies with two girls. And we're gonna go crazy because Katrina doesn't want to be clever and she doesn't want me to talk about anything. So it's fine.
My brain does no worky right now. I'm sorry.
Has it been masticated?
Truly, I don't know what that means. So I'm gonna go with no.
Chewed.
Oh, ew. No, it has not.
No.
Thankfully.
Spoiler alert, somebody will get their brains eaten on this episode.
Maybe more than their brains.
Maybe more than one person.
Maybe even not by a pig.
I forgot about the pigs. I always forget about the
How do
pigs.
you forget about the pigs?
I
They were
literally,
disgusting.
I rewatched it and I was like, oh yeah, these guys. That's not why I was there.
I've seen pigs, right? But those were different. They were different.
They're
And
boars, aren't they?
I don't know.
I don't know. I don't
I assumed they were
know.
pigs. I don't know.
Anyway, as we've already started talking about the movie, let me just introduce what this month's episode will cover. If you listened to our episode last month, then you know that we do have a special guest. Welcome, my co-author, soulmate, lover, platonic, hetero life mate, any other name in the book you want to call. Please welcome Marissa Mortati. Sound effect. Yay.
Hetero, hetero.
Well, I was trying to go for a stick it thing. Yeah, do you think anybody would be on this podcast if they weren't just a little bit queer? Absolutely not. So, everyone
No,
here is a homo.
this is true. Thank you for having me, and thank you for letting me pick out the movies for this week's episode,
Thank
month's
you
episode.
for picking them and not making us pick them ourselves, because honestly, that's hard.
I know, like it sometimes it really is a struggle. I've already been thinking like, oh God, what are we gonna do next? I have to come up with like a responsibility.
Well, it was fairly easy to pick because Silence of the Lambs is probably my favorite, quote unquote horror movie. But we had just Rachel and I had just watched Hannibal, and she had watched it for the first time. And I will share that I watched this movie in the theaters, and that means I would have been 10 or 11 years old when this movie came out. And so I
And this,
probably shouldn't have been watching it, but I did.
it just
it's
explains why
fair.
you are the way you are.
Yes. And you say, I forget about the pigs. I always forget about the pigs. The pigs have never left my mind. I've only thought about the pigs in this movie, the pigs and Julianne Moore's black dress. That's all I remember when we rewatched it. I was like, Oh, and the hanging from the balcony. I remembered that too.
So, spoiler alert, we're talking about 1991's Silence of the Lambs and then 2001 Hannibal. Thanks, everybody. So the I'll say theme of this episode that we're going to kind of focus our conversation around would be being a woman in a man's world. We've got a female detective, so there's a lot to discuss there. And then also viewing these movies through the lens of a dark romance girly, which we all are. So, my first time watching Hannibal, I was maybe a little under the influence, and that was a really excellent time for me. So, I can't wait to discuss all of my thoughts because I have many.
So, Rachel has mentioned that our theme for today, or one of our themes today, is going to be dark romance. And I must say that it's fitting because something else happened this month. That's the wrong book.
This is the first book.
It's the first one. So, as Rachel stated earlier, Marissa is her co-author, and they actually released their not first, but second book this month. Insert audio of claps here.
A round
So,
of applause.
I have not read the second one, but I have purchased it. It is sitting on my desk, ready for me to read this weekend.
I certainly know that you haven't. So, because I know what I would have heard if you had read it. So that's fine. I can be very patient, like Hannibal Lecter.
Well, I will say I was frustrated by the ending of the first one, so I was ready to know what happens. I'm sure it only gets worse for me from here.
It gets worse for a lot of people from here.
So, if you guys are into some dark romance reading, we will put a link or something in the description and you guys can go buy Rachel and Marissa's book.
I don't
It
know
is
how I've
called
never
Run
thought
From
about
Me.
that.
Why? Marketing, I tell you. So, what is it called, ladies?
It's called Run From Me. The second book is called Wildest Dreams. The first book is called Poison and Wine. And our author name is Christiana Janelle.
Yeah. Thanks, Katrina, for reminding me that I did that because I was focused on this creative venture. So, oh, wait, hold on. Does this mean that Katrina gets to write a chapter in the third book?
Trust me, you don't want
I really don't. No, we got it all going on. But,
just let me put in like a line. Let me like say a line, like a quote. No, we're good.
okay. Okay.
Rachel's mom named a horse in the second book.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Yes, right. Rachel said, "Mom, give me a horse name." And she said a name. And then we're like, "That's the name of the horse."
Love it.
Now
So
it's canon.
canon.
It is. So yeah, that is a really exciting thing. It's great to have Marissa on here. Now, I can spend the evening talking with her and her not just texting me like, "Are you done recording yet? I want to hang out." So this works out great. This is our obvious first venture into having a special guest on the podcast, so please forgive me while I figure out how I'm going to edit this, but I will try to not interrupt anybody, and my fingers are not crossed.
What about your toes?
Oh, my feet are. Oops.
Come on.
That was an accident.
Well, without further ado, should we get into the movie?
Yeah, I think Marissa should start talking about it.
It is her one of her favorites, so let's hear it.
I love Silence of the Lambs. Again, I saw this movie way too young because I think my dad rented it because we were about to go watch Hannibal in the theater. And so that's when I saw it. I was like 10 years old and I saw this movie and it filled me with so much terror, but I loved it. I like absolutely loved it and I continued to love it throughout my whole teenage years and adult life. And I mean, what can you say? It is a perfect movie. It is so good. It is so riveting and engaging. Even if you've seen it a billion times, it is just phenomenal in every aspect. You have the powerhouse of both performances, lead performances, and the chemistry between the two of them is what makes it feel romantic, is because there is such an intense chemistry between the two leads, and it is a true to form stalker romance when you include Hannibal in the discussion. So in the context of dark romance, it is a stalker romance, and it is done so phenomenally well when you think about the relationships, even though Clarice is played by a different actress in Hannibal.
It definitely does take a toll. So let me just get all of the basics out of the way. So Silence of the Lambs came out in 1991, directed by Jonathan, is it Demi or is it just Dem? Do you know?
I think it's Demi.
Okay. So that guy, kudos. Great job. Silence of the Lambs stars Jodie Foster, Anthony Hopkins, and Ted Levine, I would say, is the most notable performances. Would you agree?
I agree.
Yeah. And then, respectively, the most notable characters in Silence of the Lambs would then be Clarice Starling, Dr. Hannibal Lecter, and Buffalo Bill. Hannibal is from 2001, directed by another Marissa Mortati favorite, Ridley Scott. We will, I'm sure, have a little mini discussion about Ridley Scott and how he transformed Marissa's psyche because that's a doozy. We swap out Jodie Foster for Julianne Moore, who I think gives a fabulous performance. More on that later. Anthony Hopkins returns as Hannibal Lecter, and then we have newcomers Gary Oldman and Ray Liotta, I would say, are the most, oh, highest billed after that. Do we agree?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's all the basics out of the way. These are the main people we will talk about mostly. Katrina, how do you want to go about this? Do we want to summarize both movies? Do we just want to summarize what the story is? How do you feel?
I think a summary would be suited because one would definitely lead into the other. So we could just summarize one and two in one go.
Would you like me to summarize it for you?
I mean, you volunteered. What
Better than me.
this is your special guest, aka breakout role, so take the lead.
I already told Rachel she's not allowed to replace me if you do really well. So it's fine. You can't replace me.
Even if I wanted to replace you, Katrina, which I don't want to do, I could not. I simply do not have the time.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
I really thought that Marissa was going to say that she completely understood the depth and complexity of my relationship with Katrina. And while I am so close with Marissa and we have a certain bond, there is just also no replacement for Katrina because we also have such a special bond. And she just went, no, I'm too important.
I mean, she's not,
I'm
in a
sorry.
way,
Oh.
she's not wrong. But
I
I will
know.
say, I bring a certain je ne sais quoi, you know, of I don't know anything about actors or movies, so I'm just here for the vibes and I tell my side of the story. Rachel gets
Honestly,
to feel the smart one in this.
me and Rachel are too similar to be on a podcast because there would be no discourse. We would just agree with each other too much.
Two dumb bitches going, exactly.
Exactly.
For 2 hours.
It would be that. That's like our whole life is me
And
being
we would
like,
be right.
have you ever thought of this horrible thing? And she's like, yeah, of course, all the time. I think that's truly why we became soulmates, is because I was like, here's a really horrible thing. And she was like, you too? And I was like, yeah, of course. And then she's like, I don't want to tell you this thing. It's really bad. And I'm like, try me. And I was like, yeah, exactly that.
Now I
So,
feel like I'm
anyway.
going to get replaced.
No.
I'm just kidding.
My boobs aren't big enough to be on this podcast.
Oh, that's fair. You just got the boo aspect.
Yeah.
Because she's scary. Her, like that one reel, it's like the way your mind works is amazing, but replace amazing with terrifying.
It's true. The horrors of my mind. So, anyways, Silence of the Lambs. Let's start. We open on Clarice Starling, an FBI agent in training. She is capable. She's working out. She's running through the woods on an FBI training course. She gets called into an office. This head of behavioral studies, right? He says, hey, I want you to go do this interview because it's the behavioral science unit. Shout out Mindhunter. And he's going to send her to a prison, an asylum prison, to talk to Hannibal Lecter. There is the serial killer, Buffalo Bill, is at large. And she's like, does this have something to do with that? And he's like, no, definitely not. But it totally does. So he sends her in there with a limited amount of information. Basically, is like, talk to him, see if you can get any kind of him to answer these questionnaire, blah, blah, blah. She goes in, and Hannibal Lecter is a
So
gentleman.
hot.
He's standing behind glass because he can't have bars. He's too dangerous. He is behind plexiglass with little air holes like a fish. And they have this intense chemistry when they speak to each other. And she is honest and with him and builds trust. And he even calls out that she builds trust with him. And she tries to hand him the questionnaire. And he's like, no, we're not doing that. We have something deeper here. And then basically, the movie is that she does speak to Hannibal Lecter and get clues about who Buffalo Bill is, because spoiler alert, Hannibal has had connections with Buffalo Bill in the past through a patient of his, because he is a psychiatrist, a medical doctor. And Clarice finds out who Buffalo Bill is and saves the girl who's currently being held hostage by him. That's a brief summary without any of the details.
That was really fantastic. I was listening to you and I was like, I'm about to lose me job. Excellent,
I'll get another
engaging.
chance. That's the one that made me think of.
Now I'm a little afraid to be like, do you want to talk about Hannibal too?
Okay, so for me, Silence of the Lambs, when we rewatched it like maybe a month ago, and then we rewatched it just a couple days ago for the podcast. And when rewatching it with the lens that we're going to talk about it, one of the first things I noticed was how incredibly efficient Silence of the Lambs are is. There we go. Words are hard. It is streamlined, and it's relatively simple when you think about what the story is. Of course, there's caveats of little details and how they speak to each other, but it's basically, the three main characters. And of course, we have like Dr. Chilton and the FBI behavioral unit guy and these little side characters, but it is really Clarice and Hannibal and then Buffalo Bill. And the thing that makes the movie so engaging is the relationship between Clarice and Hannibal. That's where the money is. And their connection is so instantaneous and so gripping that it really carries the whole movie, even though Hannibal is not really in the third act very much. He's in the very beginning of the third act, and then he disappears until the very end of the movie. But he's driven so much of the story that you feel his presence and everything.
I
So.
do.
It has been discovered multiple times on this podcast that Rachel loves the people you're supposed to hate. So we
But
all
how?
know that technically, in the eyes of the law, Hannibal Lecter is a bad guy. But we find out in Hannibal a little bit more in detail that, like, he really has his, quote unquote, ethics to who he eats and kills a little bit more.
Yeah,
So
strong moral compass, okay?
he's
Even in
at
ink,
best morally gray.
I would say he's a bad man. He's you don't have to say gray. That man kills people and then eats them for fun. Like he doesn't eat people because it satiates something in him. I don't really feel that. I feel like he eats people to be like, I am a higher being than you. I am above you in my intellect, in my behavior, in everything. It's like to prove a point. And even in Silence of the Lambs, somebody asks Clarice, are you worried when he escapes? Are you worried he's going to come after you? And she says, no, he would consider that rude. And as we know, find out in Hannibal, he's left her alone for 10 years. He has not contacted her. He's not done anything. I'm sure he kept his eye on her because, like, he loves her for sure. But
Absolutely.
he respected her boundaries for 10 years.
Wreck my plans. That's my man. I think what?
Why do you say it like that?
I just heard
I was going
someone
to
say
ask.
Rachel.
Well, I was going to ask you, what are your feelings on Silence of the Lambs and Hannibal Lecter?
Positive.
Well put.
No, I mean, as I said previously, it is a technically perfect movie. It's the third movie in all time to win the big five at the Oscars, which is best actor, actress, picture, director, and screenplay. One of my other favorite movies of all time was either the first or the second. It Happened One Night, the Clark Gable movie from the 30s. I fucking love that movie. So I would like to say that I have taste. Thanks. No, I think it's really fantastic. And of several weeks ago, whenever Marissa and I, we watched it and we were just like, wow, like you can just watch this movie. Like a lot of times I can watch a movie and I can scroll or do whatever, but no, for that less than 2 hours, thank you, Jonathan Demme. I can watch that movie and I can be so engaged and absorbed. I am hanging on every word, every camera angle, the sounds in the movie, not just the sound design, but the score, like everything. It is perfect. So it's super engaging. And then Marissa raised it and she was like, do you want to watch Hannibal and then I can ruin your life? And I said, sure, why not? And I admit I was a little bit under the influence, but I watched that movie and I felt dirty for the thoughts that I was having. And I felt all of those thoughts when I watched it again, but maybe I just was less surprised and disappointed in myself for what I have become.
Katrina, I would love to know your thoughts on rewatching Silence of the Lambs and watching Hannibal for the first time.
So Silence of the Lambs, I'd seen before, and like it was memorable because there are those movies that you're like, I think I've seen it. Like I knew that I had seen Silence of the Lambs. And I think for me, the thing that stuck the most was Hannibal and just how, like, as the actor like portrayed him, I was like, as bad as he is, I like him. Like I want to be Clarice. Like I want to talk to him a little bit. Like I want to be his special interest a little bit, you know? Like you could
The
stop
raises
me
off
a
the
little bit.
charts.
It really is. And I'm not even a like a girl with like daddy issues who likes older men. So not to call anybody out.
I mean, certainly Hannibal, certainly Anthony Hopkins is an attractive man, but Hannibal Lecter is hot. Hot. And that is like the way that he speaks, the way that he moves, the cadence, the presence, what he says. Sorry, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Katrina, but like
No, Rachel's fanning herself over. She's, are you okay?
well, there's so we will absolutely discuss this, but like there's a little finger brush in like the middle-ish of Silence of the Lambs. When I was watching it, I wanted to die and throw up because I'm like, oh my God, they're in love. So like it's just insane. So carry on, Katrina. I
Well,
will keep myself at bay.
that makes me want to ask you. So I was making my notes a little bit during Hannibal. So at the spoiler, at the end of Hannibal, when she gets shot and he picks her up to carry her off and repair her wounds, I put on there like Rachel is probably in a tizzy right now.
I can confirm
I
she what a tizzy was
can't
being halved.
even
And the tizzy happened twice. The first time we watched it, she was basically screaming. The second time we watched it, she was basically screaming.
It just hits every time.
Okay. He it really did. It really do be hitting. It be hitting so good.
Oh my God. I'm like, I'm not crazy here. Like, I am seeing what is put on the screen. God bless Ridley Scott because he just makes these hot men so much hotter and crazier than I think any other director is potentially capable of making someone. And it's not my fault that I feel this way. I
Ridley
think.
Scott is a fantastic director, and I would love to talk about him more because I am mildly obsessed with him, well, at least with his movies.
I think if they did a really good job of like not allowing Clarice to even sort of kind of fall, like she trusted Hannibal. Like She felt safe enough to like, he's not gonna murder me or eat me at least. But I like that they didn't like allow her to like swoon for him, because there are books and movies where they're like, oh, I know he's bad, but and sometimes it kills it for me, but I like that she fought him the whole time, pretty much. Like, she's got this moral compass, I guess, that just doesn't allow her. She's like, I'm an FBI agent. This is my duty. This is my job. If she wasn't an FBI agent, maybe it would have been a little bit different for her. But I'd like that they had that discourse of in herself to be like, you cannot feel things for this man, no matter what.
I think
Boring.
that the trust is so real for her. Like, she does genuinely trust Hannibal and knows that he would never hurt her intentionally. And I think that's true in both movies. And she does have like a very straight and narrow moral compass. He's clearly a means to an end for her. And he is engaging with her, of course, because her dad was a cop. Her dad died and was the only person. And so she didn't have anybody. So when Hannibal comes into her life, he sees her more clearly than I think anybody else has ever seen her in her entire life. Literally, the first time he's like, you come in here with your cheap shoes and your good bag, and he's like, he's basically reading her for filth, but because he's being so accurate and pointed, she feels really seen in a way that makes her want to open up to him more, because he's already seeing through the facade of what she is and how she's perceived by the world. Because I think that she has put up a really thick brick wall because of her line of work and the world that she lives in. Because we see this happens in both movies. We see her repeatedly getting approached and hit on by different kinds of men in different ways. Jack Crawford is flattering her with this assignment and kind of mildly flirting with her, even though he's a superior officer and a professor. It is completely unprofessional for the way that he's behaving towards her. And to send a cadet into this situation with this brilliant murderer is kind of irresponsible. I mean, obviously she's more than capable to deal with it because of who she is as a character. But even Hannibal identifies that Jack Crawford did that as a play on him. But he knows that Clarice is more than just a pretty face to bait him.
Yeah, it's every single man that she encounters, minus Hannibal, either sexualizes her, undermines her, demeans her, from the very beginning of starting with her superior to the Dr. Chilton. Is that his name? As soon as she got walked in the door, he's like, well, this is a fun town if you got the right guide. And she's like, I'm sure it is. And she knows how to play it to where, like, to turn them down and not be rude, because she knows if she's firm with these men, they're very fragile and their egos will break and she won't get what she needs.
Well, you see Chilton turn on her so quickly, and he's a despicable character in my opinion. Like, to me, that's a worse man than Hannibal Lecter ever will be, no matter how many people he kills. Like, he behaviorally an absolutely rotten man. And like, we have different levels of it, because we when she's going to the etymology guys, the like two nerdy guys, and the one hits on her, it's actually very sweet and endearing the way that he approaches her. It's like, it actually is treating her like a person. Yes, Rachel?
I was raising my hand. So I'm listening, and everybody is making excellent fair points. I just wanted to add a little bit extra. So I did a little deep dive into the production and the stories of everything that's going on. So it's wonderful that you brought up our bug guy, because I read that in the novelization, that I don't know if he's a student or if, because the other guy says, well, he's not a doctor or not a PhD or something like that. For the etymology, like when he's like, you ever go out for burgers and beer or something like that, they actually do go out and they like have a little bit of a romance. And then in the novelization of Hannibal, which came out before the script, and we can talk about some other changes that Ridley Scott needed to make and do things like that, Hannibal and Clarice get together. And Ridley Scott was
Oh.
like, no. So,
What?
yeah.
Interesting.
So
This is
we haven't summarized Hannibal completely yet, so we probably should do that pretty soon. But just like to Katrina, to your point earlier, when you were like, it was nice that they actually didn't get together. And it's like, well, so basically, a producer was pushing the author who had written the original story. I think it's Manhunter is what it might be called, because there's also Manhunter that came out before Silence of the Lambs, which is basically the same story, but Silence of the Lambs is just a little bit better. I haven't seen the other one, but it's the same story. And a producer that wasn't able to work on Silence of the Lambs pushed the writer to create more material. And the guy was like, oh, I got to do this so they can make a movie on it, blah, 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 blah. And then he had Clarice and Hannibal Lecter actually end up together, and they like run off into the sunset. And then I don't remember if they go back to Italy or whatever, but like they assume new identities and they just live happily ever after, supposedly. So,
interesting.
we're not discussing the novelization of either of these movies. I mean, I haven't read them, so I don't have even an opinion, but just to say and compare that I think some of the reasons why we feel some of these themes are because of what was pulled from the actual source material.
Well, and it's interesting because you could watch Silence of the Lambs and say that there's absolutely no romance. Like, if you're not looking at it with that kind of lens, or even with like just the kind of brain that picks out these like subtleties of human behavior, I can see a world in which people are like, there's nothing between Hannibal and Clarice except for a finger touch, which is, oh my God, the finger touch. We're talking Mr. Darcy, Kylo Ren, and Rey, like. That's the kind of finger touch it is. It is such a like a moment where you're like, because they are never without a barrier between them because of their situation. And then we have this moment, and Hannibal is finally like, he's like, you have everything you need to get him, but here, take this case file. And in a desperate act, she reaches out to grab it from him, and he just strokes her finger with his finger. And it is sublime, to still sublime.
And that made me want to die. See, I'm listening to you say, yeah, you could watch this movie and not find romance in it. And I'm like, where? I don't know where, because this is a love story.
Think.
Well, when I watched it the first time, I did not see romance, if that makes you, but like I, and maybe that's because I'm not a romancy gal.
I was gonna say, you're not a what, Katrina? You're not a what?
Not a psycho.
She said it, not me. No. But I will say I never really read romance novels until Rachel forced me to. So in that sense, I can see it now, because now that I've read a few books, I got a few books under my belt. Not very many, I'm just kidding. I can see it through the lens that you're talking about. But prior to that, no. I've been like, oh, he just likes her a lot, and she's like climbing up the ladder, which is still true, but it's more upfront in your face.
I agree. I agree. All of those things are true. I mean, the connection that they have, I'm absolutely projecting specifically romantic love onto it. But I think that, like how you both have said, like the trust runs so deep and the respect runs so deep that honestly, the bar is so low that I'm like, oh, this is it. This is the paragon of romantic affection.
The only other decent guy in here is like Barney, and even he is trying to profit off of Hannibal, just as Clarice is trying to profit off of Hannibal in a career sense.
Valid. Can I take that as a segue to summarize Hannibal? Just because I know we're going to go back and forth, that way we can kind of have like an idea of what's going on. So, Hannibal, the movie, like we said, 2001, it's a sequel. Julianne Moore replaces Jodie Foster. So, it's 10 years later, timeline wise as well. So, the basic storyline is that we're introduced to Mason Verger, who is one of Hannibal's patients slash victims, and I believe the only one who has survived. He is severely disfigured facially. He's in a wheelchair. He's rich beyond belief, so he has like a medical staff with him. He's fucked in the head. And he is in the first scene of the movie buying Hannibal Lecter's iconic little face guard mask from Barney, who was a nurse or some kind of
Orderly.
order,
Yeah, he was
something
like
like
the
that.
guard or something.
Yeah, something from Hannibal's time with Dr. Chilton, a very likable character. But when Hannibal Lecter escaped, Barney took a lot of memorabilia, shall we say, and he is selling to the highest bidder. And Mason Verger, in his craziness, quote unquote, has been buying it. So I think that that's definitely something that we can discuss about, you know, the way that people can hang on to the worst things that have ever happened to them. Clarice has had a decently successful career in this time, still dealing with stupid men. Her first job that we see is a sting operation that goes bad because some fucker man cop blows the whole thing and doesn't listen to her, but she's the leader, so she's the one who gets punished for it. We meet Paul Krenler, who is played by Ray Liotta, who is also a little bit hot, but he is just a dick character who degrades Clarice. I think at one point he's like, well, hey, like if you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours, kind of a thing. Like, you know, we'll take the heat off of you if you do what I want you to. And Clarice won't ever do that. And God bless her for that. Hannibal Lecter is living his life in Italy. And an Italian cop catches on to who he is, finds that Mason Verger has a reward for anything that would lead up to Hannibal and Verger meeting again. So he takes matters into his own hands, which ends up Hannibal taking matters into his own hands, which doesn't end well for him. And then Hannibal and Clarice kind of have a little cat and mouse that starts again, until Mason meets his end. And I'm trying not to spoil anything else. There are some pigs involved. There might be a little bit more push into that romance that I love so much. And as Katrina said earlier, eat your heart out, but switch heart with brains. And that's also involved. Have I left out anything besides every detail?
That's pretty
No,
much
I
it.
think that's
We
it.
end, you know, in a spoiler way, we end with Hannibal still on the run. He escapes imprisonment once again, and I would say that Clarice is somewhat redeemed in the eyes of her work, but we don't really get a strong sense of what her career is like after that, because she's basically fallen from grace in the first 15 minutes of the movie.
Which is
In the eye,
ridiculous.
it's completely not her fault, but like that scene is interesting from a woman perspective because Clarice shows up, she is the head of the operation. There are multiple departments of law enforcement involved in this sting operation. She's clear, concise about what needs to happen, about their targets, about, well, what's the, you know, this person is dangerous in these ways. So watch your back for this and do this. And then she sees clearly that the target is holding a baby. There's a bunch of people around. She's like, absolutely not. This is a clusterfuck. I don't want to do this operation. And some little small dick man is like, I'm still going to do it, gets himself killed, and gets a bunch of other people killed in the way. And it falls all on Clarice's shoulders because she's the person who pulls the trigger to shoot the woman who's holding a baby.
And she doesn't.
Which, in her defense, was being
Yeah.
shot at by the woman holding a baby. So I'm like, if you're going to use a baby as a shield, that's on you.
Well, and she didn't hit the baby. She got a perfect
No.
shot in, and then she immediately rescued the baby.
Right.
So there's all that to consider. So now that we've kind of, brought in some more of the details of Hannibal, where would we like to begin in the conversation overall? Do we want to go scene by scene, which is Marissa's favorite format of our podcast? Or do we want to focus on a topic and then just kind of pull some examples? My assumption or my rule is if you haven't seen the movie and you're listening to this podcast, it's not my fault if I'm talking out of order or how things work. This is my place. I make the rules. I'm also Taylor Swift.
Wait, I help make rules too. Okay. No. I think doing a play by play for two movies is going to be excessive. So I like the idea of, we've talked about the dark romance a lot. I think the next topic of Clarice being a woman in a truly like a man's world of the FBI and a detective would be a good topic for us to kind of segue into. And then if we come up with other themes or topics along the way, we can do that and pull from those.
Well, I made a joke just in the very beginning when I was watching Silence of the Lambs for the podcast and taking my notes. As Marissa had stated, the first time we see Clarice, the opening scene of Silence of the Lambs is Clarice Starling on like a physical course. She's
Obstacle
on,
course.
well, it's not, I mean, it's an obstacle, so I don't remember. She's running. She jumps a little bit
There's
over a
like
tree.
a net thing and she falls down it and there's like some stuff she's gonna jump over.
Okay. They're like a little training course then. So the first thing that popped in my mind was, I'm so sick of running as fast as I can. Wondering if I'd get there quick or if I was a man. So I felt that not only was it funny, it was also correct because, as we will see for the next several hours, if you watch Silence of the Lambs and Hannibal back to back, is this girl just not getting a goddamn break.
Well, and even in the second movie, she's still doing that course. And every time she's training, she's alone. So I feel like that's probably true of how she feels in her professional and her home life is like she's by herself. Ever since her dad died, she had to go to her cousins. She's kind of just alone, other than Hannibal, who really left her alone for 10 years. But like she has nobody to rely on, and she doesn't really show that she has any friends either. Because all the men at work, they suck and they sexualize her and they just want to like use her, but not really truly care about her. So I think it's true and that she's alone and yeah, and maybe that's why she connects with Hannibal, because she's so lonely.
There
And I
is,
think
go ahead.
that I think that also her physical prowess, especially I know both Jodie Foster and Julianne Moore are petite, but Jodie Foster appears very, very small in stature. So her physical capability, she is really pushing herself, it feels like. And like, we see her doing sparring with other men, and she is physically capable, and that is shown throughout the movie. But her intellectual prowess is what makes her a great, FBI agent and an equal to Hannibal Lecter.
I was just going to make a mention that there is a character in Silence of the Lambs, Ardelia, who is kind of the only other woman. I mean, yes, you have the senator and her daughter, and her daughter is the kidnapping victim of Buffalo Bill, but Ardelia is the only one who really has any, I mean, I say quote unquote relevance, but she really is just a sounding board for Clarice to be able to kind of go off of whatever she's doing. She plays a similar character. The actor's name is Casey Lemons, kind of the token black best friend of the main girl who's doing her thing. She plays a similar character in Candyman of Bernadette Walsh. Candyman came out in 1992. So another good horror movie. Silence of the Lambs is better, in my opinion. But similar character,
Much
but
better.
it's another woman. It gives Clarice kind of a safe place to say anything. She's the one who asks if Clarice thinks that Hannibal will come after her now that he's escaped, and she says no. But I noticed that her other main contributing factor is whenever somebody just calls the FBI office and there's a payphone in the hall, she's always the one answering the phone and then just running off to go tell whomever, whatever the information is. So it's kind of, I guess, a little bit funny.
She is definitely like there to serve a expositional purpose, primarily, but she is interesting because it's the only time we see Clarice really like with her guard down is with another woman. That's like the purest Clarice that we're getting at any point because her re interactions with Hannibal are so intense that it's aggressively vulnerable. You know, we talk about the title of the movie, Silence of the Lambs, is a story that is painful for Clarice to express to Hannibal, and she's doing it to goad him into giving her information. Quid pro quo. Yeah, I really jumbled those words. But so Ardelia is the only other person that Clarice is having like a genuine relationship with that isn't
Well, it's the only
played to the
relationship that's not quid pro quo because every other man is using her to get something, whether it's sexual, romantic, case file, information. Even Hannibal, who is great, you know, still needs a little bit of back and forth to keep things interesting for him. Ardelia is supportive, doesn't ask for anything. So while it's a token character and exposition, like you're saying, it also is a respite.
Well, and I think it's one safe place that Clarice probably feels I can give this information and it A won't be used against me or B won't be claimed as their own information. Because if she was to talk to another detective about it, more than likely they're going to be like, oh, this was my idea, and then take, I don't, what's the word?
Credit.
There you go. I was thinking of another word. I don't know why I couldn't think of the shortest word possible.
Well, we see Chilton do that exactly that is he has placed recorders, audio recorders in to listen to Clarice and Hannibal's conversations and then sells that information to get notoriety. He's even like there's a scene where he is talking to the camera and he's like, my name is blah blah blah, and he is giving away so much information to the media for his own notoriety. So, you know, we are actively seeing men steal from Clarice to try and get credit for what she's been able to accomplish when Chilton says at the beginning of the movie that he's never been able to get Hannibal Lecter to talk to him about anything.
Yeah, and part of me is like, in the 10 years that Hannibal was free, I'm surprised he didn't like come for Dr. Chilton at all. Or maybe he did and they didn't show it.
Ma'am,
That's the end of the movie.
I would like to
What do
spoil
you mean? Hold
this.
on.
The very end of Silence of the Lambs, Dr. Hannibal Lecter calls Clarice Starling to
Oh, and then
do
says, I'm meeting a friend for dinner.
I'm having an old friend for dinner, and
Right.
Dr. Chilton has just gotten off a little plane. They're in like some like Caribbean island or something like that.
Oh, okay. I couldn't see his face like very clear. Like, I watched Silence of the Lambs on my computer because I found it on a website for free. because I didn't want to enter in my card information and forget to unsubscribe. So, like, I could see the plane, but I didn't realize that that was Dr. Joseph.
Yeah. The last, like, we leave you here is that Hannibal Lecter is going to eat Dr. Chilton.
As he should.
Yeah.
He tormented and tortured Hannibal every day that he was there.
Yeah, you know, and truly for just egotistical purposes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, there's no doubt that Hannibal Lecter needed to be where he was, but this is also why the character of Barney is so great, and the conversation that Clarice has with Barney in Hannibal about, you know, not only just how did Barney get all of these things that belong to Hannibal Lecter, the mask, his drawings, his notes, things like that. It's because they just had a respectful civil relationship, and Hannibal Lecter doesn't eat people that he doesn't think deserve it. So if there was respect with Barney, then there could have been respect with Chilton, but he was a dick. So sucks to suck.
And Chilton was just his inferior in so many ways. He was, you know, constantly was showing that he was, like, the only word I can think of is inferior, like, intellectually, socially, conversationally. Like, he was just like a small, kind of stupid man.
The smallest man who ever lived. Preview track from the Tortured Poets Department coming April 19th.
How many Taylor Swift references can Rachel put into anything? A bajillion.
The limit does not exist. Ma'am, the second book that you released is called Wildest Dreams. Okay? Okay?
I know. You've done this to me.
Anyway, back to the topic at hand, because this is just a bunch of girls gabbing. To keep going with being a woman in a man's world, but to turn that on its head, what does everybody have an opinion on about Buffalo Bill, who is a man? I'm using this term loosely because the movie is a lot more nuanced than a simple sentence could say, where he is a man trying to be in a woman's world.
Well, like, the thing is, they say with his psychology is that he considers himself to be a transsexual at that time. The terminology was not really commonplace of transgender, but that he would have applied for and been denied sexual reassignment surgery because of his mental health issues, which clearly there are numerous of them. So Buffalo Bill's an interesting character because I do think that he is a queer icon in a way, at least to a certain group of queer people. I see many drag performers and transgender people really embrace who Buffalo Bill is and that character. I love Buffalo Bill. I'm mildly obsessed with him. I think he's interesting and visually exciting and fun. I mean, like, I also want to wear a wig and dance to Goodbye Horses. I think I have in my life. Of course, the way that he's doing it is pretty grotesque, but not because of the gender, but because he's wearing a suit made out of women.
He's a murderer.
Yeah. He had a skill, and he just took it to a whole nother level.
Mm-hmm.
So to break down to break down the movie piece of who Buffalo Bill is, it is revealed that his true name is James Gum, so like James but not who is a tailor, where his sewing skills come into play. He also assumes other identities, all JG. So his name is James Gum. He's also gone by John Grant. He introduces himself to Clarice as James Gordon. So not particularly sure exactly where the JG kind of falls in, that they don't really linger on that. It's just kind of like a thing. So for his character arc, he covets Frederica Lippmann, who was a
Himmel.
co-worker. What'd I say?
Littman. That's the name of the woman they work for, but Frederica Bilmel is his first victim.
Okay, Bimmel. Thank you. This is why I keep her around. And
Was she a great big fat person?
well, I am, so I get it. What Hannibal kind of draws out of Clarice is this first victim had a little bit more significance, most likely, than any of the others, as most serial killer cases do. So Buffalo Bill killed this first girl who's revealed that they had like a little bit of a secret relationship for, and then he has gone on to kill other women. The motive, so to speak, is that he is abducting women who are a little bit larger, starving them a little bit, killing them, and is using their skin to create a woman's body for him to put on over his male body because he can't get the sexual reassignment surgery that he wants. In his head, he is a woman or wants to be, so this is how he will achieve his goal. He has a little bit of a flair to him, like what you're saying, like putting on like the wig and the caftan, and he's dancing around. He's putting on his makeup and he's like talking to himself in the mirror. Would you fuck me? I'd fuck me. You know, just like hyping yourself up as you do before you get down and go out. So I think it's super important to say that this is not an accurate depiction of transgender people. At the time when the movie was released, it was met with a lot of criticism because this isn't how so many people are. But this was just a huge representation piece that it was easy to criticize it. And from some research I've done, and I watched like some special feature things that I found on YouTube and read, you know, all my little trivia pieces that, you know, they've kind of, I say they, the transgender slash queer community has kind of recaptivated or reclaimed Buffalo Bill into being more of an icon than a detriment. So it's just also interesting, you know, when we say like it's hard to be a woman in a man's world and to be degraded and demeaned and not listened to or not believed. But then you also have this man who is dealing with all these other feelings, and he's doing it alone and he's not doing it in a healthy way for sure. But it's a very interesting back and forth when you think about the perspective, and I'd love to hear your guys' opinions.
Do you think that if he had been approved for like the gender reassignment surgery, that this would have been avoided, or this is something because of his psyche he would have killed anyway?
I don't know that I would say like it specifically would have made him not kill people, because what they also say is, what Hannibal says, and I'm not giving a direct quote, it's like he isn't actually transsexual, transvestite, transgender. They don't ever say transgender. They kind of use the terms transvestite and transsexual a little bit interchangeably. But he was denied the surgery because of his mental health issues. So it's not that he's actually a transsexual, it's just that he's kind of like, is projecting the right word? Like he's kind of just like redirecting his thought process into like, this is the thing that will make me feel better if I can do this thing, instead of actually likely getting help. It was revealed that Buffalo Bill was never actually a patient of Hannibal Lecter's, but he just knows him through a patient that he had. It sounded like he could have benefited from maybe a little bit better of a therapist other than Hannibal Lecter, because he might have eaten him. But then that would have
Well,
saved women. So, I mean,
it
here
would
you go.
have. One of the big themes of Buffalo Bill is we see the death moth, right? This is used on the cover, the poster of the movie. He shoves the cocoon down the throats of a few of his victims. And the idea of a moth or a butterfly, the transformation. So transformation is a huge thing for Buffalo Bill. And the excuse me, the he just needs to do something to feel like he is evolving because of his mental state. So if he had been approved for that surgery, I think he would have gotten there and then found something else he needed to evolve to, because it was never going to be satisfying for him in any way to be complete, because there was no completeness within him because he was mentally ill. And he was always going to be violent. He clearly has a skewed perspective. He has like a little bit of an experimental nature in him, it seems like from Benjamin Raspel's head that's in the storage unit. There's a body that's unexplained in Buffalo Bill's house that's just like rotting in a bathtub. It's disgusting.
That's
Um,
Mrs.
so
Lippman.
Mrs. Lippman. So there is like an experimental quality to what Buffalo Bill is doing. And I think that he would have just directed that violence in a new way if he had become obsessed with a different sort of transformation. Because there was no way that it was ever going to be fulfilling to him, because that's an impossible thing to do when you're just kind of in the cycle of it.
Something that I noticed, but I could like, it was never really touched on that I could see in Silence of the Lambs or anything, is like when we do get shots of Buffalo Bill in his home, like in his basement, going through when he grabs his gun, when he does this or that, there's like Nazi memorabilia and swastikas throughout his place. And so I think that also speaks to his violence a little bit as well, is like it doesn't talk about why he has it. But I noticed it and they made it very subtle, it felt like, and they never talked about it. So I didn't know what that was. You had an opinion on what that was.
I've noticed it too, and I just attributed it to a person who's searching for something to belong to. Because I think that many men, especially young men, fall into, neo-Nazi groups and things that are similar like that, any kind of violent group of men, because they feel outside and they want to belong to something, and they need order and structure, and that provides it for them in a way that is easily digestible for them. I think that a lot of young men would say that they would join a group that made them feel like they belonged.
Yeah, I think that's one of the, there's a lot of men that get stuck on that. They just want to research World War II. And then they're just, this is my niche. This is what I'm really good at. And I'm like, there are other things that you can look to for history than World War II.
Yeah, and I mean, just to continue the topic of mental health, I mean, it's no secret that men's mental health is important and it's often forgot about in the sense where it's not still common and celebrated for men to be open and vulnerable and honest and connective. I mean, there are guys who will say that, like, oh, they've been best friends with another guy for 20 years and they don't know each other's middle names or birthdays. Like, they don't connect the way that it's very common for women to do. I mean, you two are my best friends in the whole world. I mean, I feel like really, if I killed somebody and I called you and I said, I just killed somebody, both of you would be like, okay, well, we're gonna do something about this now. I did not, disclaimer, Rachel's not a murderer yet. But the intense friendships that I have with both of you, I reflect on that daily and how I feel so lucky and grateful to have found, you know, the other pieces of my soul. So I love you guys. But for the
Ghosted.
exactly. But
Gay.
I don't even okay, shut up. I'm trying to be nice. But to bring out the conversation, I don't know that I have really ever seen men who can say those things and put them on a platform. I mean, we have Corey and Sean, where it's the butt of a joke from Boy Meets World, where like they love each other so deeply, but it's a 90s sitcom where we have to be like, stop it, you're boys. And it's like, we all have souls, some of us. We all have hearts, we all have brains, we all have feelings. It's no different. And if the resources are available, we should be lifting men up to our level of greatness as women. And then there are also men who are just terrible, but they wouldn't be so terrible if they just like got over themselves for 5 minutes and then realize it's like, yeah, you have these feelings because like you're meant to. It's okay. And then we wouldn't have people who are falling into these, awful situations and causing pain to others because they think it makes them just look stronger or more masculine. It's like, you know what's actually really masculine? Honesty and communication and loyalty and kindness and friendship and love. Okay? It's not that
It's
hard.
much, that's it. It's much harder to some like as a person, like sometimes it's harder to be kind than it is to be rude or just dismiss somebody entirely. And I think that's what we're kind of missing is like, because if men's mental health were to improve, women's safety would also improve. It's like there's a correlation, like an exact correlation with men's mental health and women's safety, because there are men who would rather kill their whole family, then get a divorce and then look bad. Well, guess what, buddy? You look bad because now you're a fucking murderer.
To bring it around to Hannibal, Ray Liotta's character is a perfect example of this male mindset because he wants Clarice. He has expressed multiple times throughout the movie that he's attracted to her, that he wants to go to dinner with her, and that he could have a beneficial relationship. But then he turns on her when she denies him, and he endangers her, he ruins her career. He sets her up, including planting evidence in her office. Like he goes ham on her because she's denied him, and he sees her as a way to elevate himself. And of course, this ends up getting him killed. This is why we stan Hannibal, because he's like, oh, this man was rude to you. Let me literally cut open his head and make feed him his own brains because I think he is foul. And we love that for. Because we're like a little messed up. But like that mentality is something that is so prevalent in our society. And I don't know if it is specifically American, but this version of toxic masculinity that is threatened by women having the choice to say no to them, it's the same thing of, you see these messages, hey, beautiful, hey, beautiful. I'm sorry, I'm not interested. Well, fuck you, slut. Like the way that these things exist together because of the male mindset of being entitled to women is so negatively impactful on both men in this world and women in this world. Because what you said about the world would be a safer place for women if men addressed their mental health issues is completely true. Because how many serial killers are there that are trying to get back at one woman in their life by murdering a bunch of other women who maybe look like them? Like, well, they're like, oh, the Son of Sam, if you had a brown ponytail, all of a sudden you're a target. Like, it's ridiculous.
Or if you look like some dude's mother, like
Yeah.
who didn't breastfeed him or something, and he felt shorted about that. It's ridiculous, but it's one of the things that unless people recognize it nothing changes. And in the first movie, I think it's the first movie, the one of the detectives was like, oh, I thought Hannibal was like a queer or something. And he's trying to like undermine Hannibal by being like, oh, because he's cultured, he respects women and their boundaries, and is smart that makes him queer. Like, that's not an insult. And but he wants to, build himself up by tearing somebody else down by calling him gay.
Yeah.
And it's an idea. So, like, I'm sure that was like, ooh, burn, but sick burn,
Well,
man.
you know, we were talking about depictions of healthy male relationships in TV and media and like intimacy between male characters. I read an article once that said the reason why millennial women are obsessed with Lord of the Rings is because it is depictions of healthy male relationships, not because of like the actual story of like good versus evil and like the small person. Of course, you know, there's so many themes in Lord of the Rings, but because the fact that Frodo and Sam can carry each other up a mountain when they have nothing left but each other. And that is what resonates with women who live in a world that is devoid of male intimacy being viewed as a healthy thing.
I agree with all those things. I mean, yeah, absolutely. Male relationships back and forth, and then also the way that women are treated, like Aragorn, for example, even with Eowyn, even though he ends up, breaking my heart by breaking her heart, he's still so respectful of her and doesn't diminish her just because he's with Arwen. So it's that, I mean, that's just one example, but it's that, I mean, that's a really great correlation, an example.
But I think that's why Hannibal is so attractive to us, is because he does treat Clarice with a level of respect that she's not getting anywhere else in the story. He's seeing her as a whole person. He's inquisitive about her life. He knows that she's smart enough and trusts her intellect to catch his clues. He's playing a game with her, but he's like, we're playing the same game. We're having fun doing this. And I think Clarice would admit that it is fun to play his game. Like, she's there with her little notepad figuring out what, you know, the name that he gave her was an anagram for the mineral property that is fool's gold. You know, like she is playing his game and she is having fun doing so. And of course, she's trying to solve the case and save Catherine Martin, but he is enticing to her in that way. The thing that I enjoy about Hannibal as a sequel to Silence of the Lambs is in every way, Silence of the Lambs is a perfect movie. It's executed so brilliantly, even though there is some parts of it that are dated to like early 90s filmmaking. It's so visually gripping. It's expertly shot. You know, we have great visuals, you know, Hannibal's reflection on the glass when he's having a conversation with Clarice, all this stuff. It just works. Full stop. Perfect movie. Cut. Let's move on. Hannibal is not a perfect movie. There's a lot of things to discuss as far as what it could be, how it could be improved. So, as the movie, where it really excels to me is in developing the romantic part of Hannibal and Clarice's relationship. It kind of goes more into that, how he's obsessed with her, and we actually get a kiss in the movie that's done so fantastically. We love it. Yes, Rachel, your hand is raised.
Oh no, I'm like fist pumping. I'm Bender from Breakfast Club. Like, this was a win for me. I will say, so like rewatching Hannibal, not on drugs, just watching it as a movie, it is not as good as being on drugs. I need to rewatch it on drugs and like, get back into my feels about it. But the last 10, 15 minutes of that movie, they still slap. It's hot. It's great. It's wonderful. I'm like, ooh, let's. I said to Marissa, I said, watching the ending of Hannibal makes me what Marissa called horny. It makes me as horny as the beginning scene of Rise of Skywalker with Kylo Ren on Mustafar. Katrina, that's the movie that was on the cruise where you were filming me just being like, meh. Just so happy. I was so happy. So that's how I feel. I want you both to know, I want the whole world to know that if you want to know anything about me and what my sexual preferences are, it's the beginning of Rise of Skywalker and the ending of Hannibal.
Appropriate. Like, so Hannibal as a movie, I think, is a lot more twisty and turny than Silence of the Lambs as far as like what it's doing with story. It's almost like vignettes of a bunch of different little stories that are all related to each other rather than one big story, which is why I think Silence of the Lambs works better because it's simpler in a way. And so you're allowed to have these relationships be more developed. And we don't get Clarice and Hannibal together until those last 15 minutes. And that's when like the fireworks are going off and all that. Ridley Scott is a phenomenal filmmaker. His visual language is incredible. You know, I think he's one of the best directors of action sequences that we have in modern filmmaking. He can like no matter, you know, like I think his period films are particularly wonderful because he can show action and strategy in a way that makes sense to a viewer without jumping through hoops. He's practical, he's t you know, like his visual style is just very, very, very honed in. And I even watched something with Julianne Moore where she said that's how he works, is he thinks in images and it translates to his directorial style and everything making sense. This fails, I think, in the script, in the story. I'm sure in the novelization, it's probably, well, it's not the novelization. The novel probably has similar problems where it lacks a little bit of directional focus in moving one way. You know, we have kind of a lot of bad guys and not really one satisfying ending. The ending is satisfying. But that's like a different story than the one that we're being told through the majority of the movie.
That's very true. I'll point out two things. One, Marissa, I cannot believe we've gone this long and you haven't mentioned Gladiator. So there's that.
I
Two,
was thinking about it.
also, Ridley Scott directed Adam Driver in two movies back to back, and that was really good for me, even though one of those movies was not so good and they put their marketing and press into the wrong movie. But it's still good for me. So,
We need to record another 3 hours of podcast if we wanted to get into the injustice of The Last Duel and House of Gucci. I have a lot of thoughts, and Rachel's heard me many times. I think I've ranted in the car all the way from San Diego to LA about this specific issue and then stayed in the car for an extra 15 minutes to complete my, you know, verbal assault.
yeah, and then I remember a couple years ago, when did all that come out? Was that 21 or 22?
It was 21. No,
21.
yeah. No, wait.
No, I know it was. It was 21. You're right, because it came out when I was
Okay.
still at Favorite. So I told Katrina, I was like, oh, like there's a movie coming out, House of Gucci. We need to go see this movie. And I was like, Lady Gaga's in it. And she was like, oh, okay, we'll go see it. And I made her shake my hand. And I don't even know if it was like 2 or 3 days later, she texted me and she's like, Adam Driver's in this movie. You tricked me.
Yeah, and then you also tricked me into like some medieval movie that he was in too.
The Last Duel? Did we watch that?
Yeah, you made me watch that too.
You're
The
welcome.
Last Duel is a masterpiece.
It's a phenomenal movie. It's great.
I
Great on
was.
drugs, great sober.
It's fantastic and completely misunderstood. I would love to talk for hours about The Last Duel, but I will save you all of my diatribes for that podcast eventually when you guys decide we're going to talk about that.
When the booze and boobs media expands,
Yeah.
Once we get a more broad fan base, when we
Yeah.
have a fan base.
I was
So
trying to put it in a positive light.
there's lots of interesting things that happen in Hannibal. Like I do think Gary Oldman character is interesting and that psychology of that character is interesting, but it's like it pushes our main narrative of Clarice and Hannibal forward, but it does not really connect emotionally with that story beyond just this guy having previously been one of Hannibal's victims. So, it's not linear in that way, and probably the script could have gone through like a couple more rewrites to simplify it and make it better. We needed a different big bad. Like in Silence of the Lambs, we have Buffalo Bill, and that provides resolution for the story for Clarice. There isn't really a resolution for her career in Hannibal. At least it doesn't seem that way to me.
I can see that.
No.
Where I know that I, quote unquote, summarized it because I am incapable of not rambling. Where it ends is Clarice Starling basically goes to rescue Hannibal Lecter from the hands of Mason Verger. And when I say from the hands, I mean from the pigs that he has hired in to make Hannibal suffer the way that Mason Verger has suffered. And I should probably explain what that suffering is, but give me a minute, I'll get there. Let me just focus on one thought. Clarice gets shot. Hannibal ends up actually saving her, and that's the scene that Katrina mentioned where he like picks her up off the ground so the pigs don't eat her, and he just carries her off into the night, and it's beautiful. And she's been shot and injured. He gives her morphine. She wakes up in Krenler's house, Ray Liotta's house. I was gonna say Ray Krenler, but I was wrong. Because Hannibal knows that Krenler has offended his woman and he simply will not stand for that. So he takes care of Clarice and gives her a little bit of drugs and then puts her in a really beautiful dress and some Gucci shoes because Ridley Scott has a boner for Gucci.
He
And
really does.
yeah, so this was like the Easter egg of that he was going to make House of Gucci.
A Gucci sandal, specifically.
I want to know what Hannibal did to ensure that her boobs did not fall out of that dress because I was waiting for it. Like, this woman is stumbling all around this house and her nip never once slipped. And I'm like, that's impressive.
Well, if we're talking about movie things, there was probably some Hollywood tape going on, but what I would like to say is she has no boobs.
Maybe that's part of it. Because
So
it was
it
kind
wasn't
of
going to move.
ill-fitting in that way.
Yeah.
Like it's where it was loose, and I was like, oh my God, it's gonna pop out any minute. Like, what is happening? That's
No.
what I was stressed about. There's a man with his brain exposed, and I'm thinking her nipple's gonna pop out at any second. Like, that's where my head was.
That's where the sexual tension comes in. It's not the what, it's the when.
Well, and I wonder if she felt like kind of exposed or even like violated in the fact that like he changed her and bathed her, did her hair, all of that. I don't know. She never really talks about it. She didn't really get a chance.
Well, I bet Julianne Moore as a performer felt inspired by Ridley Scott's direction of this, which was to make me feel a lot of things when I was just like, okay, like beautiful dress, beautiful
This is,
shoes, beautiful
to me, this
house.
is a classic romance trope to me, presenting the girl with the dress for the date, except it's through the lens of the dark horror element of she's been injured, and he's also one of my other favorite tropes. He has tended her wounds and then put her in a fancy dress and sandals. Like, oh my gosh, thank you. Like, that shit has stuck with me my whole life. I love, 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 love it. It's so delicious to me. Nom, 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 like a little raccoon. But it for Clarice, I'm sure it was a violation 100%, because we've seen her uncomfortable with even gentle sexualizations of her from Hannibal, like the drawing of her nude, and she puts the post-it over the boobs because she doesn't want to look at it, even though it's a drawing in her office of her. And it's not even of her because he's never seen her nude. But he also, like, you know, it's classic stalker stuff. He goes into her house and moves things around and, like, takes the glass that is teetering precariously on the armrest of a chair and moves it to a table quietly as to not wake her. And, you know, like, all these little things. So there is a severe violation, which this version of Clarice Starling would be like, absolutely not, no thanks. Because in the scene where she's waking up, she is trying to get him. She is trying to arrest him. She is trying to stab him. She is not feeling romantic towards him whatsoever.
Yeah, she calls the police before she comes downstairs.
She's got a snow globe and she's like, this'll do.
Yeah, so there's a landline upstairs before you go to the staircase, and when she picks up the phone downstairs like blinks when Hannibal's in the kitchen. So he knows that she's called, but he's Hannibal Lecter. He gives no fucks.
He knows the call time and the response times.
He knows everything. I trust him. So Clarice stumbles down the stairs. She's got her snow globe as a weapon, which Hannibal calls out, what are you holding? I think that you'll try to hurt me. We don't want to do that. Set it down. She's still loopy from the morphine, but she sits down at the dinner table where Ray Liotta's just yep, yep, yapping away. And
And I feel like I need to interrupt you to say he tells her good girl multiple times during the sequence. I'm like, it's pointed. It is a pointed choice to say good girl as many times as he does.
he also says okie dokie a few times, and I love it. I'm like, so like since we was watched it the other day, like for the thing, I've texted Marissa so many times. So she says something to me, and I say okie dokie. So yeah, he's great. I love him.
Yeah, and I did like the reveal of Kremler. Like, we know that his personality is off. Like, he's not acting like himself. He's
Well, he's
very
still being a dick.
He's still like, even though everything that's happened, he's still condescending. He's still like, it's ingrained in him. Like, can you type? Can you transcribe? Like, he's still being condescending, but then he's nice, but then he's condescending again.
Well, and
And then,
he tells Clarice, he's like, I've always wanted to watch you eat. It's like, are you
like, what
like,
does that
it's
even mean?
boring. It's gross. Like, okay,
Yeah, and
cool.
then Hannibal reveals by taking his hat off that there's an incision made on his forehead, and then just removes his skull cap and head altogether and exposes his brain. And as he cuts and feeds it to him, Clarice is like gagging. And I'm like, fair, honestly. The
I
thought of
get
it, which,
it.
and then I notice, when Hannibal escapes, he's on the plane, and that little kid is like, what do you have there? And Hannibal has part of the brain cooked in his little to-go bag. And I had heard something, but basically, for the reason that like cannibalism is also bad, other than the moral aspect of it, is that it can actually affect you psychologically. Not just from the trauma of eating another person, but like if you eat another human's brain, there are defense mechanisms within your brain that will attack the person who is eating your brain and make them, I think it says like I wrote it down somewhere. I don't know where it is.
Degenerative.
Yeah, like their brain will start deteriorating as well, like their thoughts and their psyche and all of that.
Well,
So what
maybe.
happens to him after that?
Well, okay, here's my opinion on that is that Hannibal Lecter is so smart and so intellectual and has so many thoughts that he needs to kind of calm everything down because he's just too good and too accomplished.
It's like his ADHD medication to turn his brain off.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
get it.
I mean,
It's just more
to his
unconventional.
defense, he's only eating a little tiny bit. He's really conservative, honestly, with how much brain he's cutting out. Because he's like, It's weird because he's not inflicting pain to Ray Liotta, but
Right.
he is torturing him. It's a very strange way to torture a person and to kill them.
And in a way,
Yeah.
he did not know it was happening to him.
Well, I he said Hannibal Lecter says something about him not feeling the pain. Like your brain itself can't feel pain. So like when he's like cutting into like the little protective sac under the suckle, whatever I just said, skull. He had to have had some kind of anesthetic because he makes an incision around his scalp. So, and he's, acting crazy because he's Ray Liotta is acting off before his actual brain gets touched. So he's
Yeah,
on something.
was it
Yeah,
drugs or a lobotomy? Which one?
he
I
and
mean, I'd
so
say not lobotomy yet.
I think he's under some sort of anesthetic that is both impeding his mental cognitive function and his physical function because Ray Liotta's not tied up, he's not restrained in any way, but you can hear when Julianne Moore is upstairs, you can hear a whirring that is clearly, in
Yeah.
context, Hannibal cutting through the skull so that he can knock it off.
Yeah. The bone saw.
As a chronic migraine sufferer, when Hannibal breaks the sac around the brain, so anatomy wise, your brain does not sit on your bones. That sac has fluid in it that goes all the way down your spinal cord, right? And your brain sits on top of the fluid. If that fluid is low because of dehydration, injury, or whatever, your brain rests on top of that and it creates what they call a spinal headache, and it causes extreme pain. So to me, when he pulls that sac open, that fluid is going to get displaced. And so there should be some level of pain there for Ray Liotta, regardless of, the brain's nerve endings. So, but he's so out of it and so drugged, I don't think that he's feeling anything. I think he is completely numb.
Yeah. And then just as like another little extra touch, because Hannibal Lecter pays attention to details, the piece of brain that we see him cut into and start cooking, like table side, he's got like one of those little single
Bunsen
burner
burners.
things. Yeah, something like that. He takes what is like the prefrontal cortex and he's like, the part of the brain responsible for manners, because Ray Liotta has none. So he's just a funny little guy. He's charismatic, and something that Mason Verger says in the beginning when Clarice goes to visit him, and this is one way where Clarice's star could get a little bit back on the rise, is if she's dealing with this very rich, powerful, influential victim, and she goes and, we're like talking about him, but not really. But something that Gary Oldman's character, Mason Verger, says, how he's gotten by through all the trauma that he's suffered mentally and physically, is finding religion. And he talks about being forgiven by the risen Lord. And then he makes a little joke, which I take as a more of a joke with modern times and phrasing, when he says, you can't beat the Riz. So just to
Yeah, given
say,
today's context, yeah.
it's extra funny now. I mean, it was probably funny
Yeah.
then, but like we specifically in this day and age are using the term Riz for charisma. And Hannibal Lecter, he's got a little bit of Riz, and you can't beat it.
Well, and let's give a round of applause to Gary Oldman's performance because he has developed this voice that is very, very funny. So when he says, you can't beat the
That's
Riz.
perfect. That, oh my God, Gary Oldman, are you here? You could be a man on this podcast. I would allow it.
There's a lot of, I mean, Gary Oldman is known for transformative roles, and obviously he's under extreme amount of prosthetic makeup. You cannot tell it's Gary Oldman. You can't even tell it's, like his voice. It's so different than Gary Oldman's voice. But He is a funny little guy. Like, I don't know if I'm just so dark and twisted that I think it's funny, but I be giggling when he's on screen. He is very funny to me.
I think
But
Ridley
also
Scott
some.
is a funny little guy, and he's like,
Oh yeah.
let's do it. And the
Yes.
performance, like, if you did it any other way, you would have a completely different movie. I think that there's, I mean, I will admit, I have not seen as many Ridley Scott movies as Marissa would probably like me to, but the movies that I have seen, he does have, he is excellent. His craftsmanship is incredible. But he has this level that I can only describe as whimsy that's included, where there is something like Gladiator. To me, I was high as balls, but that movie's a fucking comedy. I was cackling with the shit that was going on. You're probably not supposed to, but I was. And it
You
is
mean the
so.
part when he goes home and his farm is burnt down and his children and wife were hung? You were giggling, cackling? What do you mean? I don't
I
really
think
care
she's
about Russell Crowe that much.
specifically referring to, the way that Joaquin Phoenix plays a villain. He is very, he's got the rizz.
He
But,
seems like.
like, he's giving good reactions that are like appropriate for the situation that's happening, but also very comedic. Like the whole thumbs up thing where he's like, "Oh," and then he's like, "Ah," like he's. And I mean, a lot of credits due to Joaquin Phoenix and that too. But like, I think Ridley Scott thinks that life is funny even when it's dark because it is. Like that's why his movies are so compelling, is that they do contain a multitude of different emotions. Like The Last Duel is such a serious film, but boy, do I laugh every time when Matt Damon's trying to get on that horse and the horse just steps to the side a little bit and is like, nah. And it's played for comedy. Like, it's an important part of the movie that Matt Damon is humiliated in this moment, but it is funny. Like, and Ridley Scott, saves that beat because it's important to the storytelling and to the character development that he is humiliated in that moment. So I think that he does have this. I think whimsy is a really great word for it, is the comedy that just naturally occurs in life and how people can be funny little guys, even when they're demented and villainous, because Verger's whole thing is he wants to capture Hannibal alive so that he can make him experience the kind of pain and torment that he has felt since surviving his attack, even though his wounds are self-inflicted, which is a whole other thing that would take us another 20 minutes just to get into.
Oh, I could say it in 3 seconds. Well, I'll give myself 30. What happens is, Mason Verger is a weird little guy. He is a pedophile. I can't remember if he had actually murdered anybody at that point, but he was a patient of Hannibal Lecter's, and Hannibal Lecter has a little bit of riz, and Verger invites Hannibal over to his mansion and is putting on a little performance. He has a little bit of a Buffalo Bill quality about him, where he's dancing to his music and he's having a good time. Hannibal Lecter gives him a popper. I say in quotes because what the actual drug was, it could be or it couldn't be, I don't know. And Verger is a little bit of a sexual deviant, and he has like this asphyxiation little noose that he's playing with, that he explains that it feels good when you. And Hannibal Lecter's influence while Verger is on these drugs is to get Verger to cut off pieces of his own face to feed to his dogs. So it's awful and gross and humiliating and degrading. And the best slash worst part of it all is that Hannibal doesn't even kill him. He's forced to live this way the rest of his life. And he didn't kill himself. He had a mission where he's like, okay, now I'm gonna get Hannibal back. We probably could have said that before when we were talking about him, but we're talking about it now. But Gary Oldman plays this character so incredibly well that for me, I mean, I'm still on the Hannibal side where I don't want Verger to kill him, but he's believable. I get it.
I'm surprised that Verger didn't quote unquote like kidnap Clarice as a way to lure Hannibal. And I feel like that would have been a much more efficient and quicker way to get Hannibal present than the other way. I'm like, this guy's just not efficient at all.
I agree with that, but because the Italian cop has made a relationship by seeing Hannibal, who is under disguise and pretending to be like a professor or some kind of keeper,
librarian.
Who cares? Who cares what he was? But this Italian cop kind of figures out who Hannibal is and figures out that there's a reward involved. So Verger doesn't really have to do anything because this Italian cop is just trying to offer up Hannibal on a silver platter. Mm-hmm. Hannibal gets wise and then disembowels and hangs this Italian cop out of this church for the entire square to see. And then he escapes, comes back to America to make his dealings with Clarice and, you know, have a little love story. But that is kind of honestly, like the B plot of the whole thing. I think the A plot is supposed to be
Berger
as like Clarice. The conflict.
Well,
this is what I'm talking about, is the structural issues with the movie is that you have basically a different movie for about 25 minutes in mm-hmm. the, you know, second act is like a completely different movie. It's engaging and interesting. I love the way it's shot. I think I'm like, when you're watching it for the first time, you're 100% invested in it. But when you watch it after that, you're like, this doesn't really have anything to do with anything except for getting Verger closer to Hannibal.
Yeah, I felt like the whole portion of the movie that was in Italy could have been 10 minutes and it would have been fine and you wouldn't have missed anything. Like the relationship that he builds with the detective or inspector, whatever they want to call him, like that could have been done a little bit more efficiently.
There's a lot of great.
That's just my opinion.
No, I completely agree. There's a lot of great character relationships because Hannibal kind of figures out what the cop is up to and appears at the same opera that the cop has taken his wife to, who is very beautiful. And then when Hannibal is confronting the cop, he's like, well, maybe before I go back to America, I'll eat your wife, kind of a thing. So like there's mm-hmm. absolutely this horror element still involved. The cop enlists like a pickpocket, and I was watching, I was like, attenzione, pickpocket. The cop enlists a criminal to try and get a print so he can be certain that Hannibal Lecter is Hannibal Lecter so he can continue on with his money-making mission. So there's a lot going on. It's still well done. That's not why I'm here.
Well, and it's like, there's great moments in that, you know, like at the beginning of that sequence with the pickpocket, he tells the pickpocket, wash your hands. He washes his hands in the fountain. By the end of the sequence, the pickpocket has been stabbed by Hannibal and is dead. And then the detective goes and washes his hands of the blood in the same fountain. And shit like that is like beautiful. Like, I love that as far as like storytelling.
And it's a pig fountain.
It doesn't matter though. Like, that whole sequence is, you could cut that all out of the movie and it would not make a difference at all. We've had him visually confirm that it's Hannibal Lecter. We have Clarice call the inspector and be like, that's Hannibal Lecter. Like, this fingerprint is just so that he can get a deposit on the money from Gary Oldman. So, like, yes, technically it matters in the story, but it's like a detail that the movie would be better without. And I like the sequence. It's well done. It's just, this is like a script problem. Like, take it out. The truly transcendent moment of Hannibal, though, is the cops are coming. We're hearing the sirens in the background. Hannibal and Clarice have moved from the dining room. Ray Liotta, he's not present anymore. He's pretty close to dead, or at least unconscious. They've moved to the kitchen, and now we have Clarice has tricked Hannibal into being cuffed. She's fighting him. He takes her ponytail, catches it in the fridge, and breaks the fridge locking mechanism off so that she is stuck there with her head pulled back. And he goes, But what is it he says exactly? It's like, would you say that you love me to save yourself, basically?
Or would you ask, say, please stop, or something, I think.
Yeah. If you love me, would you say please stop? And she goes, never. And I'm like, oh, I love this. And then he pretends that he's going to bite her. He comes in fast and hard at her face with his teeth bared, and she doesn't even flinch. And he gets this devious little smile on his face. And he, what does he say, Rachel?
Don't know.
He says something. He's very appreciative of the fact that he didn't, she didn't flinch. Oh, she says, that's my girl.
Rachel's dead. She is dead. That's the way. And
She's been
then
lowered into,
he just lays one on her. Like,
gives her a big old smooch. And oh no, it's when he's smooching her that she locks the handcuffs on him.
yeah.
And he's like, where are the keys? I don't have time because the sirens are coming, right? And he see him go for the cleaver. And he grabs her hand and he goes above the wrist or below it. And he's dangling the cleaver over her wrist. And he turns to her and says, this is going to hurt. We see him thrust the cleaver down and it's silent, but we see her screaming. Then the next shot, we see Clarice. She got both her hands. He cut off his own hand because he would not harm her. Oh, love it. She was perfect the way she was. He could not destroy a work of art like Clarice Starling. And then he goes away. There's no real resolution for Clarice. Another failing of this movie, in my opinion. And then we see Hannibal on the plane and he offers brains to a little child. That's it. But those moments in the kitchen, incredible. Absolutely phenomenal.
I'm okay.
The cup an equivalent to your brown paper bag?
I've got an empty cup from Panera that I'm just chewing the straw on into the lid because I am remembering things.
It really hits the spot. Like that moment really makes you forget about everything that happened before it, and you're just like, whew. At least if you're like a little mentally unstable, like Rachel and myself.
Yeah. Can you believe this woman? She knows I'm under the influence. And then she says, "What if we watch Hannibal?" And I'm in an agreeable mood. I'm like, "Sure, yeah, like I want to make you happy. We can watch this movie. Sure. I'll just, do my thing. It's a movie you like." I do that often with movies that Marissa likes, and most of the time they end up being good. Sometimes they're not, but I was just like, "Yeah, sure, we'll do this." And she ruined my life. Now I know.
Can I say that I had not seen this movie in at least a decade, and I was not like I was a dark romance girly in my brain, but I didn't know that's what it was. I just knew that I was attracted to things that I should not be attracted to.
Well,
So
it happens.
I did not recall Hannibal beyond the pigs and Julianne Moore's black dress, like truly, and like Gary Oldman's little disgusting face, like that's it. There was nothing else that I remembered, so I was going into it fairly blind. And then as it was happening, I was like, oh my God, I've awoken something in her, and I didn't even mean to to rouse it in you, but I did. And I apologize for that.
Well, you're not sorry.
Not really.
Yeah, no. This woman, well, I was gonna say this woman came into my life, but I demanded that I be in her life, and then she took it and ran, and I have ended up who I am in the past few years because I am what you made me. I mean, th this is the part of Hannibal that I care about. I care about Clarice Starling, and I care about Hannibal Lecter and their relationship. Silence of the Lambs, perfect movie. Every single piece of it I'm interested in. Hannibal, really well done, just a little disjointed. Because all of this has happened, and we have kind of talked about Mason Verger's end and how things work, but it's not following a real linear cycle, so it's kind of hard unless we went through beat by beat, which is less entertaining for me. Like, I feel like this has been a good conversation, just back and forth of whatever things. Sorry if it's a little difficult to follow, but this is how the conversation really happened. Done, done.
Katrina, what are your thoughts?
That she wishes I would shut
It's
up.
empty. No, it's empty up here right now. I really liked it. I remember that I'd seen Red Dragon before, and I didn't realize that Hannibal came before Red Dragon. But honestly, I can only remember the end of Red Dragon. But I won't do
Isn't
any spoilers or anything.
Red Dragon a prequel to Silence of the Lambs?
Correct. I've seen Red
Yeah.
Dragon, and Red Dragon is pound for pound a better movie than Hannibal. It is much more like Silence of the Lambs in structure, in like how Hannibal is engaging with his co-star. Edward Norton is playing a different investigator, police person, but they are having a much more similar relationship to Clarice and Hannibal in the first movie than what we see in Hannibal. So, and we have like one singular big bad in the movie that's compelling and interesting and has a psychology that you want to dive into and that Hannibal has insights into.
He is cray cray. The
He's a
Tooth
really
Fairy is cray cray. You think Buffalo Bill was crazy?
And it
Equally, if
is
not more.
Ralph Fiennes, a la Voldemort, a la Taco Tuesday.
Oh, yeah. Speaking
Yeah.
of, the menu is leaving HBO Max this week. I got an email about it and I was like, oh no. So I am that kind of person. I like to see what movies are leaving every streaming service every month, so I make sure to prioritize them because that's how my autism works.
You
That's
need
your
a
special
deadline in
task.
order to complete a task.
I
That's
do.
fair.
But it doesn't matter if you set the deadline because you made the rule, you can break it.
Well, don't give me that much power. It breaks the system.
That's how it works in my brain. If I set the deadline, it does not matter. Someone else has to set it for me.
I have an Aries moon, though. You are Cap Sun, Cap Moon, Cap Rising. Like,
Oh my
you didn't
God.
get a joy. Katrina made a TikTok a couple years ago with her birth chart, and there was somebody, just someone, I have no idea who it was, who was like, "Are you okay?"
I think there's like six or seven Capricorn placements.
Well, we were talking about birth charts, and I told Rachel, I said, I'm a Libra sun, a Scorpio moon, and a Leo rising. There is not a stitch of responsibility in my birth chart. I'm just like, go with the flow, loosey goosey.
I'm a Virgo sun with an Aries moon and a Sagittarius rising. Like,
You're just fighting yourself all
it is a
day.
struggle here, my dude. I don't remember what I was talking to Marissa about on the phone earlier. I don't know. I was probably being a little bit of a bitch, but then she was like, "This is your Sagittarius." And I was like, "And then, so what?" So.
She hates, well, we did discover while watching these movies again, as Hannibal Lecter's power is perception, right? He sees people and he knows them. He can talk to them and he knows them. And that's my superpower.
Well, and
And
we
I was
talked
like,
about
oh
it.
no.
Yeah, because the way that Marissa just fucking calls me out pisses me off sometimes. I'm like, oh, to be loved is to be known. No, this bitch, like, I'll say something and she's like, well, that's because you blah, 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 blah. And I was like, okay, be quiet. But
So
we
does that
did
make you
also.
Clarice and her Hannibal?
That's what we talked about because I love the game. But we also discussed too that Hannibal, okay, because he is also putting on a little bit of a performance, it's hard to pinpoint exactly, but I was getting some Gemini vibes from him. I get a little bit of a Sagittarius vibe. I mean, he's so meticulous that I can kind of see a little bit of Virgo in him because he does it in an emotionless way. He does it like to further a result. So I feel like there's some Capricorn in there, but I feel like it's a little bit more Virgo. He's not as stubborn to be a Taurus. So like I feel like those are his big three in some format. But I feel like Clarice is a strong Cancer. I'm speaking of Jodie Foster's Clarice, but I'm like, that's a Cancer.
So I just Googled what is Hannibal's zodiac sign, and they said according to the books, Hannibal Lecter celebrates his birthday on January 20th. So he's an Aquarius sun with a Scorpio moon.
Okay, well, here's the thing. Gone Girl made Amy Dunn a Libra, so we can't like authors speaking as one, I know we just put in little details like for the hell of it sometimes, or and maybe Gillian Flynn knew somebody and loved someone whose birthday was in October, and she's like, well, I'll just make this character's birthday in October. That bitch is not a fucking Libra, so no, so I
As a
don't care
Libra,
what they say.
no.
Yeah.
I
I'm just
appreciate you
saying.
putting in the research though.
In
I
our
did a
book,
quick
Run For
30-second
Me,
Google.
Wildest Dreams, Ivy, the main character, celebrates her birthday, and she's an August Leo, and that is accurate to her personality because we care about the details. Buy it now on Amazon.
And Barnes and Noble and Books a Million. Also, our website, ChristianaJanelle.com. Bing.
By the physical and the electronic version.
I would love that. Please. I'm so poor.
It's only cost me about $1 million.
Oh God, yeah. Anyway, that's for the Books and Boobs podcast.
That's right. Whenever we start our book club podcast.
Yay.
Coming soon.
So final thoughts. I know that this was kind of a little up and downsy, and we got, but I think especially in the beginning, we really talked about like our themes and what we were putting in there, and then we just had a good time. But I'd love to know, is there anything else that we, want to leave on the mat and put in the podcast, and I'll make sure that I notate so I can edit it.
Jodie Foster should win an Academy Award every time somebody watches Silence of the Lambs because her performance is so dynamic and beautiful to watch every single time. She tells so much of the story in her eyes. Incredible. Just absolute perfection. She deserves the world. Also, I had the thought that Clarice in the movies does feel a little bit gay because she never reciprocates feelings towards a man at all. And nobody ever asks her about her sexual preferences. And I don't know if this is because Jodie Foster is very, very gay, but I feel a gay vibe from Clarice despite her relationship with Hannibal.
Valid.
I could see that because I think a lot of women who center men, and especially in like their sexuality, would at least like smile or giggle at some of the jokes. She was not happy. She was deadpan the whole time. She was like, it's not funny. And
The
that's good for
only
her.
guy that she gives even a little bit to is the etymologist.
And that's
That's the
because she knows that
perspective.
he's sweet and he's nice. He's not gross and dirty.
Yeah.
Like so, and I was disappointed when I started Hannibal, and it wasn't the same actress for Clarice, and I was like, "Well, this kind of put a little damper on it for me," but it's
Julianne Moore had truly an impossible job and still managed to deliver a really good performance.
she
It's
did.
nothing like Jodie Foster, but it is still a very compelling and interesting performance. And after, I would say, like half an hour, you kind of forget and you're just invested in that version of Clarice.
Yeah, I completely agree. So it's a detriment role, but she really took it and ran, and I feel like she honored what Jodie Foster did, but also made some things her own. I saw a bunch where Jodie Foster was really trying hard to be a part of this project, but at the end, there were just too many things that weren't lining up. Story-wise, production-wise, scheduling-wise, and she was just like, nah, I'm out. And then Anthony Hopkins, he wasn't gonna do it if she wasn't gonna do it. But then he's like, well, nobody can play this but me, so I'm gonna do it. And then we got a really compelling story from a clip that Marissa showed me Julianne Moore talked about working with Anthony Hopkins and how incredible it was, and it they really did the best. Like, every piece is done as best as it can be for the production design, the sound design, the directing, the lighting, the cinematography, like the acting. It's so top notch. And I hate to say this as a writer, but when your script suffers some, it affects everything else. So
Yeah.
it's.
I wish somebody would have made the joke like, oh, you've changed over the past 10 years. You know, I just wish somebody would have dropped that joke in there somewhere to like break the whole like, this is not the same woman. She's a redhead. And also, I do wish that she could have committed to the Southern accent a little bit more because I feel like that was such a part of Clarice's identity. And it's even something that Hannibal touched on a little bit, like, oh, you've tried to shed that country accent so hard, but it's still stuck with you. And like in the beginning of the movie, I could hear a little bit of the Southern accent, but it really faded for me throughout the movie, I think.
I feel like it went from being West Virginian to like strong woman. Like, I'm assertive. I'm putting my foot down. I'm saying these things. So, and that's just the thing. It doesn't mean that Julianne Moore did a bad job, but you can't help but compare to the same character being put in
Right.
two different scenarios.
Right. It would be different if Clarice had died and someone replaced her and it was somebody named Bethany. Then you couldn't do that. But.
Julianne Moore recalled filming the kitchen scene with Anthony Hopkins, and at one point he leaned into her and said, "Isn't this fun? What we're doing is so fun." Like, he was having a great time making this movie.
Having a great time watching
You
This is
should
why
write
I had to go
him.
to bed last night.
You should write him some fan mail so that he can like feel appreciated. Like, tell him thank you. This is my address. Goodbye.
Well, I mean, he was the narrator in The Grinch, so I mean, he had my heart from a very young age.
But
So.
overall, I really liked it. I think they were really well put together movies, and I enjoyed watching them.
It makes for a different episode when we enjoy the movies we're talking about, doesn't it?
It does. Well, speaking of movies we're going to do for this episode, what are your thoughts for April?
My thoughts for April are Tortured Poets Department, Tortured Poets Department, Tortured Poets Department.
Is there a horror movie that Taylor Swift is in that I don't know about?
Cats.
Cats. Is
I've
scary.
heard that it's bad, that it's scary, but I have not
I've
watched
watched
it.
it twice.
Oh, see, I mean, I was never interested in it, even though I'm such a big fan of the opera person. Like, I just don't care. So I think like one time I was doing my laundry and I saw it was on some streaming service. So I literally fast forwarded, watched Taylor's part, and I was like, okay, bye. Like, just to say I did it as a Swiftie, I don't care. She's in The Giver, which is a really phenomenal movie. It got a lot of hate, but I don't know. I loved the book when I was a kid, and I thought that it was a really good movie. She's in The Lorax. She's in a really great episode of CSI, and I can only say it because I didn't really watch CSI, so I watched her episode, and I had a good time.
She's in Amsterdam.
Oh my God, I love Amsterdam. That movie was made for me. It's
Yeah.
so phenomenal. Marissa didn't love it that much, but I loved every single piece of it. It Christian
Timothy
Bale,
Oliphant
he's
shoved
Eggie.
Taylor Swift under under a bus, which is a unique thing that you get to say you did in your acting career, is I got to shove Taylor Swift under a bus while my child, who's a big Taylor Swift fan, watched.
Yeah, I mean, she's in the first like 10 minutes of the movie and she gets killed, but her death is the inciting incident of the whole movie. So, in my opinion, not only I understand that there's a lot that David O. Russell has been involved with, I really enjoy his movies that I've seen. So, sorry. I'm not an apologist, I just like the movies. But it's David O. Russell, it's Christian Bale, it's John David Washington. I mean, it's a million people in the movie, but then you have Taylor Swift, and then everybody is talking about Taylor Swift's character the whole time. It's a movie made for me. I want to talk about Taylor Swift all the time.
It truly
She's
is
also
for
in an
you.
episode of New Girl for like 10 seconds.
Yep, she played Elaine. So.
So, but I have a suggestion. I don't know if you've seen it or not. It's
Go
called
for
Malevolent.
I just watched that not
Oh.
that long ago.
I really liked it.
It was interesting. Yeah, it could
There
be
was a
something.
twist. It was twisty.
Yeah,
Twisty.
there was. I mean, when I watched it, it was one of those movies like that had just been on the list, and it's like, yeah, I'm just gonna watch this. So, yeah, I'm down.
Okay. Easy peasy. Malevolent it is. Do we at least have a good like outro for this?
Thanks for listening.
Sweet. Perfect.
Perfect outro. Perfect outro.
I mean, we
Here,
got
I can say something real quick if we want to.
go.
Well, thank you guys for coming and listening. If you stuck around this long, who knows how long this ended up being. But we are so happy that Marissa could join us for this. We had a really great time. She made some great suggestions. Next month, we may or may not, I make no promises, be reviewing Malevolent.
Why
So if you
would we
haven't
make no
watched it,
promises? If we don't make the promise, then we're not going to get it done. Guys, we're doing Malevolent. I have to watch it at least twice. I have to take notes. I have to get ready. I have to schedule the Zoom. I have to do all the
okay. Next month, we will be reviewing Malevolent. So, if you have not watched it, do so now. Do your homework, and we will see you then.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you guys for listening. We hope that you enjoyed our episode, and we look forward to hearing from you.
Find us on Twitter or Instagram to request a movie or even just to discuss your thoughts at Booze and Boobs. Or send us an email, boozeandboobs@gmail.com.
Yeah, and we're working on turning this into a thing. So if you can please follow us on Patreon, our account there is Booze and Boobs also.
And what are some of the benefits to joining our Patreon?
Oh, Katrina, I am so glad that you asked. As a patron, you will get early release episodes, bloopers, mini episodes where we showcase scenes from the movies that we're talking about, or just conversations that we're having that we had to cut from our recording.
All that and more. And they're fun tiers. You can be an A cup, a C cup, or you can join the Triple D Plus group like us.
We truly appreciate your support, and we look forward to growing our following to create more content for listeners like you.
So we'll see you next time, or else.
Yeah, let's end it with a threat.